All right, are folks back?
Yep.
Yeah.
Coming back. Cool. Re-entering. All right, why don't we quickly go around and just say who's on the call, and then we can do announcements. So this is Minda over at National Center for Science Education.
This is Emily Floyd at the National Climate Assessment.
Hi, Emily.
Frank Nepold at NOAA.
Hi, Frank.
This is Catherine Carlson and Anna Sherpa from Institute at the Golden Gate.
This is Dan Zales from SRI International.
Joe Henderson, University of Delaware, Made Clear Project.
And Kate at NCSC as well.
Super. Anyone else? Okay, great. Any announcements?
So just one quick announcement. In the summer season, keep on moving through the White House initiative on climate and education and literacy initiative with the teacher workshops. And we just closed out the Boulder one, and we're moving on to our last one in Florida. And then also the Climate Generation, new organization formerly known as the Wilstiger Foundation, did their workshop in Minnesota as well, their institute and forum, and they're all focused on climate education. So these are kind of past events, but they're really fine examples of teacher-focused PD. So anyway, just giving you guys a heads up on some of the recent stuff.
Super, thanks. Any other announcements? Tamara asked me just to remind everyone that both GSA and AGU abstracts are coming up. So if people can submit to the climate sessions, they should do so. I myself have two sessions. One is on dealing with misconceptions in climate literacy, and one is getting scientists into the classroom, so more general. So if anyone's interested in either of those, I encourage you to submit an abstract. Okay. Moving on, so the National Climate Assessment, Emily, I'm really glad you're in on the call. I appreciate you joining us. I know you and I talked a couple of weeks ago about the next round of the NCA and ideas about how education could be included in some of those pieces. And I'm wondering, I hate to make you repeat yourself, but I'm wondering, rather than me playing operator, if you would just kind of fill people in on the kinds of things that we talked about. And then maybe we could take the conversation from there.
Sure. And if I leave something out, please go ahead and prompt me.
Sure.
So the work that CLEAN did last summer to develop the learning pathways is very much appreciated. And I know both climate.gov and USCCRP have featured it throughout the year and have pointed folks to it, and I think has been a really great resource moving forward with the assessment. We're now thinking about the fourth climate assessment, which is slated for 2018, 4 years after the third assessment. And we recently closed a comment period asking for input on the sorts of things that people are interested in learning from assessments, or questions that they might have, as well as the topics that they would like to see addressed in future assessments, including things like communication, education, attitudes, beliefs, sort of opening it up to really understand what people would like to see addressed in future assessments, as well as a host of other climate-related information needs. That request also asked people to give us some ideas on how we can do a better job communicating about the climate assessment, working with groups like all of you through NCANet and other avenues to collaborate on communication, education, outreach type activities. So we're currently in the process of synthesizing that, summarizing that, and hopefully I will be able to give an overview of the sorts of input that we received at the NCANET meeting later this month or in the following one in September. In the meantime, we are also moving forward on putting together the outline for the assessment and thinking what will be included in it. And if we expect to have additional public comment periods where we ask for feedback and input on a draft outline for the report. And we also plan to have soon a call for nominations for our federal advisory committee. So that will come later this summer as well. And that's basically asking for people who would serve as advisors to NOAA and the other agencies on the National Climate Assessment, asking folks to, so the people who are part of that committee would provide advice on what's in the assessment and may provide advice on other things like outreach, education, communication. And so with that request and with that formation of the committee, we're going to be looking to have a fairly diverse committee, geographically diverse, disciplinarily diverse, institutionally diverse, and it will be an open call for nominations. So thinking about if you or other people in the community may be interested in being nominated, start to plant those seeds and think about that, because once the call comes out, we'll be asking people to send those in. And then looking forward, if we look at the timeline that we used for previous assessments, we'll probably be assembling author teams over the fall and winter, and in about a year and a half may have a draft available for public comment. This is, again, you know, looking back to how we ran it last time and making projections for the future. Final report would come out in 2018. One of the things that will be really valuable as we go through this process is we already have the NCANET community. Last time we started about halfway through the process. This time, groups like CLEAN and individual organizations that participate in NCANET are already helping us do outreach work and bringing input from your stakeholders and members back to the assessment through public comment periods, through participation in NCANET and sharing resources and really building that community of practice around conducting and using scientific assessments and climate assessments. And so I anticipate that NCANET will remain a really viable and valuable part of the assessment process. And so thinking about how we can work through NCANET to develop materials and plan for delivering information about climate and pointing to some of the resources that we're developing on an ongoing basis. For example, we have a special report on climate and health that just closed its public comment period and will come out, we anticipate, next spring, so spring of 2016. And so we'll have those sorts of products that are coming out a little bit more frequently. It won't just be, you know, dumping one big assessment every 4 years, but finding ways to provide information and enrich our communication and outreach and delivery of information throughout the assessment process. So, did I miss anything? Oh, Frank.
Yeah, just a quick question, Emily. Some of us in the community have talked about a couple of times is, you know, the technical input reports or the special reports that are considered to be part of the next assessment. Is that same process going on again that did in the third?
You mean the call for technical input?
Yeah, well, so, Yes, but there's another piece to it, which is the special reports, right? Which are not the
right,
not the the thing that is the technical stuff, but the special stuff. The reason I'm asking, Emily, is one of the things that is true in our community is there's a lot of work going on climate education, climate literacy that has never really been correctly characterized.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, how much is going on, which states are doing what, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, we've never really done an impact assessment of the climate literacy framework or the energy literacy framework. So that said, you know, if we did a technical input or special input report, that then might be able to be input into the official process. That's kind of what I'm getting at.
Yeah, so there are a couple different ways that things come in. There are special reports that are convened and conducted by USGCRP agencies. So those are things like the climate and health assessments and the food security reports. And then there are some of the broader, what we have termed technical inputs, which are basically bringing information into the assessment process that may be conducted in support of or with the goal of providing input to the assessment. And those, I don't want to say a free-for-all and make it sound bad, but it's basically a free-for-all in that there's not an approval mechanism. If people say they want to conduct this and make sure that it gets into the assessment process, we can provide guidance about what sorts of deadlines we might have, like wanting to make sure any reports are completed in time for the end of a public comment period on the assessment so that you can actually highlight that. And then through NCANET, we've been cataloging many of those as a part of our resource library.
It sounds like that in this characterization, the technical input would be much more in kind. If we did something like a technical input on climate literacy in the United States, that might follow the timelines. That might be something that would be considered to be into the system.
Yes.
Did I get that right?
Yes.
Awesome. And so it would be useful to know what those dates are if we as a community ever got as bold to take on something like that. I don't know how that would work, but a lot of us have talked about that different ways.
I think the general timeline is if we select author teams fall, winter of this year, they'll be working on their draft. So depending on when you want to have this available, do you want to have it available to them when they're working on their drafts? Then obviously getting something together in the next 6 months or so would be really great. The public comment period, which the end of the public comment period is sort of the final deadline for anything new to be considered by authors to include in the assessment, that would be probably early 2017 that such a report would be the deadline for such a report.
Great. Thank you so much.
So, Emily, it sounds like almost the first thing that we could get involved in would be this whole nomination for the advisory committee. Is that right?
Yeah.
That's sort of the next thing up. And I'm sort of curious about what the sort of time requirements are involved in that, and also what would it seems a little bit more obvious to me what a scientific advisor or something like that would look like, but I'm sort of curious how an educational advisor might help the NCA, what that role could look like.
So for the National Climate Assessment, we're thinking about it and about this Federal Advisory Committee as providing advice not just on the document, but on the process that's used to assemble the report and communicate and educate and engage around the report.
Okay.
So the sorts of, so there are a couple different roles that someone who is coming from the education field might provide advice on. So certainly if there are portions of the report that address questions about how climate change is communicated, used in education throughout the nation, if that were to be included in the report, and we don't know if it will be because we don't have an outline, but
right.
That would be one area, is to provide advice on how those topics might be included in assessment. The second piece would be thinking about how we actually create a report that is conducive to inclusion in teaching and in education programs, whether they're in the classroom or informal education venues or whatever it might be, thinking about ways to deliver the report content through websites or through other venues, providing advice on ways to deliver it, ways to connect with the communities that would use it. There's a potential for advice both on the content of the report and then on the process of how we make the report and how we deliver it.
Gotcha.
Good. You know, Minda, one piece of that, and I've heard it numerous times, there's the education community a lot of times doesn't know about the National Climate Assessment, and so
yeah.
They struggle to pull it in when they're working in that related area, and they're like, you know what would be great if there was? And you're like, you mean the National Climate Assessment? I've never heard of that. So that's one piece of the work, right? But then there's another piece which has to do with the way the website was designed. On one hand, was a great enhancement based on the second assessment, but then there were pieces of it for, and this is why the learning pathways existed, was, you know, there were a lot of really key pieces that were buried and kind of hard to see, and it weren't intuitive for educators. And so there's that piece of guidance as they go out and design the next site. How would you design it more optimally for different audiences? And that's another bit of technical input that would be probably useful in the building up to the delivery of phase four. Or version four.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, Frank, because I remember in our early conversations when we were talking about creating the learning pathways, just the folks navigating from their own computers, everyone was getting lost and stuff like that. So I think that's a really good point, particularly for educators to be able to access it.
And, you know, there's one other piece, Minda, which is in the decision Emily, you know the section very well. The reaching decision makers, the kind of that section of the assessment. You know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
In there, there's a whole piece about capacity building, and a lot of that capacity building happens at undergraduate, graduate level. So, you know, there's that whole portfolio of stuff in there that is another piece of the puzzle.
Yeah, that's a really good point. So I guess my question is, if that's sort of the first piece is having someone from the education community represented and getting someone nominated, who might be, I think, willing and interested for doing something like that? I think it's not something necessarily I could take on, but I think it's something that's extremely important. So that's one of the reasons why I wanted to bring it to the call, to see who might be interested, or even someone who's not on the call who we think we might be able to convince to be interested in being involved in that piece of it. Is there any thoughts?
I have one, but I'll wait and see if there's others since I've been blathering on.
Yeah.
Well, this is Mark. I wasn't sure. I like a question that was asked about how much time they think it would take.
Oh, yeah. Emily, do you have a sense of that?
I'm sorry. Can you say that again? I couldn't quite hear the person.
Do you have an answer to what the time commitment might be? And I might be able to think of some people.
I think, so I can base this on what the time commitments have been for previous advisory committees. So we had meetings in person probably twice a year. Those meetings were generally in D.C., although not always, and lasted about 2 days. And then perhaps on a quarterly basis, we had a phone call that lasted about 2 to 3 hours. So it, you know, it might be 2 to 3 of those sort of 2 to 3 hour phone calls, plus two-ish in-person, say, two-day meetings per year. And then in the interim between those meetings, any sort of special reports that the advisory committee may wish to produce would take additional time. I think we had working groups that met, the communication and engagement working group met generally monthly for about an hour a month. And the members of that maybe had another 30 minutes to an hour a month of email or phone communication with each other and with me on various projects, or, you know, actually 30 minutes to an hour of, if it wasn't phone, actually producing whatever that guidance might be. The committee would likely not be asked to be authors of the report, but rather providing advice, and so the time commitment would not include the additional author time commitments that the NACADAC that we had for the third assessment needed.
Emily, I guess, is that clear enough? There's a follow-on question to that.
Yes, thank you.
So, Emily, given there's another role here, which is the authorship piece, and there are a lot of very accomplished, you know, writers in our community. If there was like this section on decision makers and, you know, where the capacity building piece is, would there be ability for any of the community to be part of the authorship team as opposed to the, you know, the advice and technical support team?
I think that's definitely a possibility. We don't yet have a call. Well, we don't have a call for the advisory committee, but I think that will come before we have a call for the authors, obviously.
Great.
I don't know exactly how the author teams will be formed this time, but my hope is that there will be an opportunity for nominations in one way or another.
Great, thank you.
Okay. Well, Frank, you said you had some thoughts, so you know, feel free to hop in.
Well, so this is a coupled thing. If we go back to the impact, basically the state of climate literacy. It's a little noisy where I just am. Just think of it as we've never characterized, as a result of all of our work since 2008, what's happened in the United States and even beyond that. But we've never actually documented that with any, you know, authorship or quality or evidence. We know, for example, that the climate literacy guide was used as an input into the, you know, the NRC framework, which was used to make the, you know, the NGSS, and we were talking about it earlier today, and a lot of us spent a lot of time helping that happen, and as a result, there's going to be a lot more teaching of climate across the nation. So there's a direct chain there. It's a very easy line of evidence to make, but we've never documented it in any way. And the other thing to remember is that kind of report is also important to the U.S. climate action reports, which is also going to be completed in January of 2018. So, you know, those are important documents that we've not ever had input, technical input into. So I think as a community, I know it's work, but, you know, it's probably a way to do it in a shared load, shared authorship way, however that gets done. But I think we as a community should think about that in a much more robust way as an input into the National Climate Assessment that we've done to date. So it's a big, big idea. It's a big lift, but I think it's an important kind of where we are since 2008. So anyway, I'll stop there and see if there are any questions about that.
No, I think that's a good point. Is that something that you think you want to start pushing forward, or?
I think if we as a community don't push it forward, I think it only harms our ability to document the important work we've done.
Yeah.
You know, basically we've done a lot of things, a lot of projects that have done a lot of things. You know, Joe, you're on from Made Clear, and others are from other projects, and NCSC, you're part of this. Everyone on the call is actually part of this. So, and then there's way more people that aren't on the call. So anyway, you get my point.
Yeah,
but if we don't ever document it in an authoritative, kind of strong authorship with evidence way, I don't think we're doing good for our community.
Yeah. That's a good point. Well, anyone else have any other additional thoughts to add?
Joe, I'm just going to call you out. I mean, you come out of the academic community as well. What do you think about this?
You know, I was thinking as you were talking, and I've just been listening to other people. You know, I'm in the process of writing a paper right now for the flagship journal of Ed Research on the inability of educational research broadly to deal with the issue of climate change. I do think it's, you know, my sense is that there's lots of scattered projects all over the place doing lots of good work. So there's, on the one hand, celebrating what's already been done. On the other hand, there's convincing people in education broadly that this is an issue. I don't get the sense that this is even a priority for a lot of people who are committed to kind of certain paradigms of research. So much of it is still in science education, which is in the one sense good, on the other sense not so good. I think that I like that idea, Frank. It sounds like a ton of work, but I also think that it would be really nice to say, like, climate change education is an emerging area, and emerging globally, and I think that there's an opportunity to impact that field. You know, there's a lot of politicking that needs to be done, and that's been frustrating from our perspective, but there's also just not a lot of empirical research out there around kind of what works, how does implementation happen, things like that. So that's just two cents quickly.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I mean, but, you know, another way of looking at this, and I think this is true in the National Climate Assessment itself, is there's a lot of baselining. And I think, you know, getting a base, you know, where we were in 2005 and where we are now is drastically different in a very positive way. But
right,
still
definitely.
Has a lot more to go. And I think that this is only going to go that way more in time. So, you know, I think as a community we have to do a good job of documenting the progress and the challenge before us so we can hit the bogeys a little bit better than kind of, you know, it's a cloud right now, and I don't think we can do better than a cloud.
I agree.
And then the one other thing I'll say, Joe, is that I think, you know, this is true with climate adaptation, is when somebody starts doing kind of field analysis, they actually start realizing there's much more practice and, you know, whether it's research is another matter, than we all realize. And I think that that's maybe a good thing for us to appreciate the amount of substantive work that's kind of going parallel without even realizing it. So, you know,
right, that's
another
that's
advantage. But so, cool.
Interesting.
Any other thoughts?
No, I think that's a really good point, though. I think it'd be useful to a lot of people to have that kind of information in one place.
The other thing that I think is important is, and this comes out of the tri-agency community from 2.5, maybe 3 years ago, was that as the federal funding for climate change education started drying up, and, you know, made clear as one of those last large-scale initiatives with the other CSEP phase twos, is the ability to kind of be able to characterize what it takes to do this, and people are going to want to fund this, whether it's philanthropic, corporate, or federal or state, you know, again, and, you know, picking up from where we've benefited and moved forward as opposed to kind of restarting and re-innovating what we've already innovated, you know?
Yeah.
So we're beyond where we were in 2005, but we're not all the way there by choice. Sorry.
Good point.
So I think you guys get my point. We can leave it there.
Yeah.
But I guess, Emily, does this even come close to something that might, if it came to pass, you know, be considered as a technical input or something like that?
Yeah, I think so. I think it would be something that's useful to the broader USGCRP community and not just for the National Climate Assessment.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Without any question. I mean, we haven't even done this for the R product, which is a USGCRP product, which is the climate literacy guide. You know, we it's floating out there, uncharacterized.
Yeah, and I think we had a workshop last year. Frank, you were there on evaluation of NCA3, and thinking about what sorts of metrics might be most useful and how to actually do evaluation. And so this, I think, would fit in very well to help advance those conversations towards reality.
Yep.
Great.
Agreed.
Super. All right, any other thoughts? I think maybe what I'll do, regarding our conversation regarding nominations is, Emily, when do you expect to be sending out a announcement for that?
We're not in control of it.
Oh, okay.
So I think sooner rather than later, but I don't have a specific window.
Okay. Well, when that
Emily,
happens,
who
but,
is...
Oh, go
sorry,
ahead,
Emily. Who is in control of that process?
NOAA.
Oh, it's a NOAA FACA again.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Thank you.
So when that does happen, what I can do is I'll share it on Clean, and maybe we can have some suggestions, even just on the listserv of folks who might be interested. And also, I really like Frank's idea. It's a value-added piece that could get tied in as well. So maybe sharing that with folks as well on the listserv would be useful. Any other thoughts or questions for, since we have Emily on the phone right now? It's a good opportunity to pick her brain.
What is the status of kind of like the impact analysis of NCA 3? Is that moving forward still? Do you know what I mean? That evaluation workshop, I mean, you know, as a result of the NCA 3, this happened.
Right. So pieces of that, like looking at media coverage of the report and the outreach-related things, there's more information about that. But I think in a sort of more coordinated evaluation sense where somebody, you know, comes in and does a larger program evaluation of it that is inching along.
I gotcha. So the idea of just awareness, right? You know, kind of something like the Yale, Six America, George Mason kind of thing. Like, have you ever heard of something? You know, just to get a sense of, we're not built to market this thing and to make sure people are aware from whatever audience you want to choose. That's just not our, we don't have that enterprise, nor do we have that budget. But it would be good to know kind of where it's working well and where it's, you know, where it's a challenge that remains. So anyway, I mean, but that's the one that's inching along.
Yes.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Great. All right.
Well, if there's no other thoughts or anything, you know, thanks everyone for getting in on the call, and thanks, Emily, for joining us. Really appreciate it. And I hope everyone has a really great week.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Minna. All right, bye.
Thank you, guys.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.